Here we go. It's a well-known verse. Fairly well-known verse. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Naishang Matistha Vadaruk. You want to get find the verse? 7:5:32. Chapter 7. Sorry, Skanda, Canto 7. Chapter 5, text 32. Yeah, I know. Pratyaksha Vagamam. Varsham. Pratyaksha Vagamam Varsham. We're directly experiencing rain. Okay, all ready? Naishang Matistha Vadurukramang Rim. Sprishatyanartha pagamo yadartha Mahiyasam padarajo bhishekam Niskinchananam navrinita yavat. Okay, chant it. Don't have your specs. You want to chant it? Naishang matistha vadur.
Naishang matistha vadurukramangrim.
Naishang matistha vadurukramangrim.
Sprishatyanartha pagamo yadartha.
Sprishatyanartha pagamo yadartha.
Mahiyasam
padarajo bhishekam.
Nishkinchananam
navrinita yavat. Oh, what happened?
Water.
Huh? We lost it. How do we get back to where we were? Where we were? Someone else chant?
Back,
I don't know how to go back. Choki Shekam Niskinchananam Navrinita Yavat. Anyone else, Bharat? You lost it? Any ladies? Like to chant? No. Okay. Okay, well, just to save my voice, someone else could read it out and translate. Do you want to read it? Save my voice, but read it loudly. Come close and so it goes, sound goes in there.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Abhay Charanarvinda Swami Prabhupada.
But chat, say it loudly. Yes. Speak to Matajis, don't speak to me. Yes. They should hear.
Translation. Unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined toward materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for His uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. Purport. Becoming Krishna conscious brings about anartha apagamaha, the disappearance of all anarthas, the miserable conditions we have unnecessarily accepted. The materialic body is a basic principle of these unwanted miserable conditions. The entire Vedic civilization is meant to relieve one from these unwanted miseries. But persons bound by the laws of nature do not know the destination of life.
What's the verse? What's this quote? Prabhupada's quoting here from another instruction of Prahlad. Paraphrasing. Nate vidu swatagate nivash. Actually, in practically every line of Prabhupada's books, you can relate it to some verse. Let's go on.
As described in the previous verse, Isha Tantriyam Uru Dhamni Baddaha, they are conditioned by the three strong modes of material nature. The education that keeps the conditioned soul bound life after life is called materialistic education. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that materialistic education expands the influence of Maya. Such an education induces the conditioned soul to be increasingly attached to materialistic... To be increasingly attracted to materialistic life and to stray further and further away from liberation from unwanted miseries. One may ask why highly educated persons do not take to Krishna consciousness. The reason is explained in this verse. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide, fully Krishna conscious spiritual master, there is no chance of understanding Krishna. The educators, scholars and big political leaders worshipped by millions of people cannot understand the goal of life and take to Krishna consciousness, for they have not accepted a bona fide spiritual master and the Vedas. Therefore, in the Mukunda Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3, it is said, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo Na Medhaya Na Bahuna Shrutena. One cannot become self-realized simply by having an academic education, by presenting lectures in an erudite way, Pravachanena Labhyaha, or by being an intelligent scientist who discovers many wonderful things. One cannot understand Krishna unless one is graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only one who has surrendered to a pure devotee of Krishna and taken the dust of his lotus feet can understand Krishna. First, one must understand how to get out of the clutches of Maya. The only means is to become Krishna conscious. And to become Krishna conscious very easily, one must take shelter of a realized soul, a Mahat or Mahatma, whose only interest is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.13, Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritaha bhajanti ananya manaso jnatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Therefore, to end the unwanted miseries of life, one must become a devotee. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunaistatra samasate suraha. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatha guroho tasyaite katita hyartaha prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.123. Yam evaisha runoti tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrunoti tanum swam. The Lord is obtained only by one whom He Himself chooses. To such a person, He manifests His own form. Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3. These are Vedic injunctions. One must take shelter of a self-realized spiritual master, not a materially educated scholar or politician. One must take shelter of a Nishkinchana, a person engaged in devotional service and free from material contamination. That is the way to return home back to God.
Daishang matisthavadurukramang rin sprishatyanartha padamo yadartha mehi asang padarajo bhishekam niskinchananam niskinchananang navrnita yavat. Unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined toward materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for His uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way can one be freed from material contamination. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Srishtam Manamapi Shachiputramatra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Gajamurupurim Maturim Goshaptim Radha Kundam Giribaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyataf Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivashakam Vitam Scha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading verses like this and Srila Prabhupada's commentary. Can you hear me? Yes, sir. Yeah? Alright, reading verses like this and Srila Prabhupada's comments upon it, that my experience, and I'm sure it's the experience of so many other devotees, it made and makes our faith in Srila Prabhupada very strong. When these books were first being released, nowadays you get the Bhagavatam in one set. When I joined, it was up to the fourth canto had been published, so the volumes, they started coming quite quickly after that. The books would come, so we didn't know what was coming. And of course I had to read, I was way behind others. So it made our faith in Srila Prabhupada strong, that it's a Shastric principle that one has to have firm faith in Guru. And that really is a very central part of Vedic culture or modern day Hinduism. Just came to my mind many years ago in Baroda, one young girl was telling me, "Oh, my guru, my guru, my guru." I said, "Well, what is it, guru?" He says, he's an avatar of Lord Shiva." I said, "He's not an avatar of Lord Shiva. He's bogus to advertise himself like that." And she goes, "Oh," she was crying and ran out because she couldn't hear that her guru was a cheater and a rascal. Which, to advertise himself as an avatar of Lord Shiva, is in itself evidence that he's a cheater and a rascal. But anyway, the point that one should have firm faith in Guru, if you have that, you advance nicely. If your Guru is of the category who's stated in this verse, Niskinchananam, one of those who have nothing to do in this world but to love Krishna and preach about Krishna. If you have that, you're on your way back to Godhead. And if you don't have it, you're going nowhere. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadaha yasya prasada nagati katopi. If one can please the bona fide spiritual master, one can get the mercy of Krishna. And if not, then you're going nowhere. And if you have that faith and you lose it, then you lose everything. There's one incident, I'm not sure which year it was, must have been 1974 or 1975, the first two big Mayapur festivals. And Achyutananda Swami and others took devotees from the Mayapur Chandradaya temple, took them from the ISKCON premises over the river to Navadvip, to Sridhar Maharaj's ashram, and Srila Prabhupada got, when they came back, Srila Prabhupada got news that one Gauriyamat Sanyasi had spoken there in Bengali and had said something critical about Srila Prabhupada, which was quite common in those days. Not Sridhar Maharaj himself, but someone was addressing the meeting, and Srila Prabhupada became very angry. Why did you take them there? Even though he was very respectful toward and very close to Sridhar Maharaj, he was not at all happy that the devotees had been subjected to this and to criticism of himself. And even much earlier than that, this must have been 1967, Srila Prabhupada was in San Francisco area, and he was planning to go back to India to recover his health. He had become very poor in physical health. He was manifesting such pastimes. And Mukunda Das asked Srila Prabhupada, well, maybe one of your... Because there was no surety that Prabhupada would come back at all. The movement was very new. It was hardly even a movement at the time. And there's no surety that Srila Prabhupada would come back or that he would even stay in this world much longer. So Mukunda, quite innocently and you could say pragmatically, asked Srila Prabhupada that, well, maybe one of your godbrothers could come, because they knew Srila Prabhupada had godbrothers. And Srila Prabhupada, he appeared quite hurt, Mukunda explained, and said that if he says one word different to what I say, that will spoil your faith. Now, what to do in the present day when we have so many gurus in ISKCON and they say all kinds of different things to each other? We're supposed to say what Prabhupada says, but there you could say different interpretations. And maintaining faith in the guru when being a guru in ISKCON is a public position and likely to be lampooned on the internet. The internet has turned anyone with two fingers and who can type and who has something, some kind of electrical interactions going on in their neurons, turns anyone into a theologian. Back to so-and-so is criticizing continually on the internet. So how to maintain faith in such a situation? Faith in Srila Prabhupada, in his disciples, the faith they had in him. I'm talking about when, during Srila Prabhupada's manifested pastimes, that was generated by his obvious spirituality. Devotees didn't, in the beginning, of course, they had no idea what Krishna consciousness is. Even the term Krishna consciousness, I'm not sure when that came into being, but Krishna bhakti, they had no idea what that is or what, nothing, really no idea. In fact, if they had any idea about spirituality, which most of Srila Prabhupada's followers had some idea, but it was all some garbled, mixed up Mayavad. I suspect that Srila Prabhupada made this mantra, the Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarne. Srila Prabhupada composed his own pranam mantra, that he is the deliverer of the Western countries from impersonalism and voidism. I suspect that he, because he had, dealing with the hippies, it was all talking about Buddha and Vivekananda and Vedanta and the Tibetan Book of the Dead and Gurdjieff and all kinds of impersonalistic hodgepodge. So Srila Prabhupada got the impression that that was very deeply affecting and infecting Western culture, which actually it is, even those who don't directly subscribe to such impersonalistic ideas. So the first devotees, they really had no idea what Krishna consciousness is, but they could understand that Srila Prabhupada was a very highly elevated spiritual person. Even there are so many anecdotes, I'll just relate one. There was one elderly man in Germany. This was, I believe, 1974. Oh, I'm just trying to remember his name. I just can't remember his name now. So Prithu Prabhu invited him to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. He was well known, Professor Durkheim, that's his name. He was well respected. He had done his own research into what we can call Indian spirituality, which had been known in Germany for more than 100 years at that time. And he himself was some kind of a guru, but not this cheating, cheap type. There were many German intellectuals, he was a professor, and these were serious, sober people, and even there were leaders of the Catholic Church and bishops and this and that coming and taking instruction from him. He was a serious spiritualist, although he was serious about what he was doing. He wasn't one of these cheap charlatans that come from India and talk nonsense and have sex with their disciples, and which was common in America at the time. Anyway, he came to meet Srila Prabhupada, and they had a long discussion one evening, and then the next morning on a walk, and then when Prithu was driving or taking him back, this professor took him, taking him to the bus station or whatever, he said, Professor Durkheim said, it must have been in German, but Prithu Prabhu translated, he's through about Prabhupada. It means we are seeking, he's there, he's got it. He could understand. The devotees were very, very impressed. They were there. Because the devotees are all young men, and there's Prabhupada and this professor, and they're both very learned and elderly and senior, and it was, for the devotees, it was like seeing two great sages meeting together. But Professor Durkheim, he wasn't at all puffed up like many so-called spiritualists, and he took a position of submissiveness to Prabhupada, and he recognized, it was like he became almost like Prabhupada's disciple in their discussion. So anyway, I'm just making the point that if anyone was sincere about spiritual life, they could recognize that Srila Prabhupada was a highly elevated in spiritual consciousness. He was naturally, he wasn't making a show of being spiritual, but he was fully absorbed in Krishna, and that manifests in his personality, his blissfulness, his activities, his humility, his dedication, and others may make a show of that. Like they nowadays very easy to do with Photoshop, but it was possible to do that previously also, to take a photo and put some effulgence behind it. There's no real effulgence there, but you just pretend effulgence. Srila Prabhupada wasn't. Actually, there was one famous photo by Gurudas in which black and white photo, and there was natural, just, you can see right there in the effulgence around Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada, he generated faith. By speaking like this, by giving in his commentary on Shastra, he gave this, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in one famous lecture. He said that the guru is supposed to speak the teach the Shastra to his disciples. So in the course of teaching, and he's supposed to teach what's there in the Shastra, just as it is. So in the course of his teaching, when he comes across the verse, Acharyang mang vijani anavamanyeta karhichitna martya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva mayo guruhu, which means that Krishna is instructing Uddhava that one should very well know that the guru is myself, Krishna says. Of course, this is to be understood in terms of bheda bheda tattva, means he's different and non-different, but here in this verse, Krishna is emphasizing the non-difference. And one should not disrespect him in any way. One should not consider him an ordinary mortal or be envious of him, because the guru is the representative of all the devas, which means all the demigods and all the previous acharyas, all the great saintly persons is represented by him. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in the course of this lecture, said, what is the guru to say when he teaches this verse? What are you supposed to do? Should he instead say, well, actually you should get a whip and beat the guru? You have to teach it as it is. You can't avoid it. So in the course of teaching that verse, if he says, well, you should say Jai Gurudev, he's indirectly saying you should say Jai to me. How do you avoid it? Well, you can't avoid it. You have to teach that. So Srila Prabhupada taught that in Shastra, but even prior to that, people, the original followers of Srila Prabhupada had faith in his personality, in his teachings. Those who came in New York, especially in the beginning, they came by regularly hearing his teachings and by following them and the effect that it had. Prachaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. By following these teachings, they began to experience Krishna consciousness. I was just quoting that. Prachaksha vagamam varsham. We can directly experience how this building hasn't been rainproofed. It's something to think about for the, probably all of them, huh? Anyway, some few drops of rain came through. Now the rain has died down. But we directly experienced rain on our heads, raining on the parade. So devotees, they experience that. But the main criterion Srila Prabhupada gave for faith was faith in Guru, was to see if he speaks and acts according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. He should follow his own Guru, all the previous acharyas, and the center is Shastra. And again, when Srila Prabhupada said that, that was in accord with Shastra, because we have Shabde Pareta Nishnatam Brahmanyu Pashamashrayam, which means that a guru is supposed to be submerged in, that Nishnatam gives the idea, submerged in, absorbed in the transcendental teachings of Shastra, and has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the parampara system. Not that someone just jumps up and says, hey, I'm a devotee, I'm a pure devotee, but he has to be a servant of his guru, who is a servant of his guru. There's a whole parampara and sampradaya. So this is the main criteria. And others, there are so many symptoms by which one can ascertain who is this Niskinchananam, or Niskinchanam plural? Who are those devotees who one should have faith in and follow? Now, devotees often tell me that they have faith in me because they see that I say the same thing as Srila Prabhupada. So it's accepted that Srila Prabhupada is the great Paramahamsa, Niskinchan, topmost swan-like devotee, Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivrajaka, Acharya, Ashtotara Sata, Sri Srimad, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We say this. We offer our best to him, obeisance to him, who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Vishnu, who is a topmost swan-like devotee, wandering mendicant, preaching the glories of Krishna, who is decorated with transcendental qualities. He's accepted as the topmost Paramahamsa. And devotees say they have faith in me because what I say is the same as Srila Prabhupada. Many times devotees have said to me that, well, I heard your lecture, then I heard Prabhupada's lecture, and it's the same. Well, should be. Shouldn't be anything. It shouldn't be surprising. It should be that everyone who's a follower of Srila Prabhupada should say the same thing. No one's saying exactly the same thing. Not exactly. I remember something struck me many years ago, and I remember it to this day, when Subhag Maharaj, Brahmacharya at that time, in London said that, before I'd come to India, he said that someone could memorize word by word all of Prabhupada's lectures, one lecture, and just speak it, but it wouldn't have the same effect because the same purity isn't there. That struck me. But actually, it should do if the devotee is sincerely following. Should have the same effect. Otherwise, the parampara is getting watered down, isn't it? Should be the same message that comes through. Otherwise, it's getting watered down. That danger is there. That's why it's good to see. If we say the same thing and we follow, then the same potency should come through. And of course, like my talks are not, they're not exactly the same by any means. Everyone's different. And Srila Prabhupada, he said that you should hear and then speak the message in your own words. In other words, the message won't change, but everyone will present it somewhat differently. It's not that we're turning out some clones or robots, that everyone's just exactly the same. That's not even of the philosophy that we learn from Srila Prabhupada. We learn that everyone's an individual. But it means that the philosophy is the same, the teachings are the same, the focus is the same, the stress is the same. There may be differences in manner of presentation, but I suppose I quote Srila Prabhupada often and Shastra as he did, and I try to emphasize what Srila Prabhupada emphasized, like book distribution, rising early in the morning for Mangalati, reading his books, quoting from his books, Varnashram and farm projects. I try to stress the same kind of thing. I try not to pretend to be on a higher level than I am. We're all das, anudas, anudas, anudas. Srila Prabhupada is that great acharya who the whole world has to follow. Whoever's fortunate in the world will follow him. I'm one of them who's fortunate to be sheltered by him, and you all are also. And although you as my disciples are supposed to look up to me, that is proper, but we're all following Srila Prabhupada. I try not to pretend to be on a higher level, but it's hard for devotees not to think that. It seems that they ascribe higher level to me than I'm fit for, and in some ways, maybe it's good that they do so, because you're supposed to have faith. But the point is that the faith is, it should be based in something substantial, not just he's a guru, therefore you have faith in him. It's supposed to be around the other way. You should have faith in someone and then you accept them as a guru. Not that, okay, here are all the gurus. Guru 1, Guru 2, Guru 3. Okay, which one do you want? Take your pick. It must be hard for, I'm sometimes saying, it must be hard for devotees whose gurus aren't so transparent in that sense. Maybe they're trying to keep up with the times and present Krishna consciousness in a manner that they think will be more effective for preaching. For For instance, Srila Prabhupada is very strong against Mayavadis, bogus scientists, and actually against pretty much everything. It wasn't in Krishna consciousness. That wasn't in Krishna consciousness. But often today it's actually said, taught, that we shouldn't, some gurus are teaching that we shouldn't speak like that, even though Srila Prabhupada said we should speak like that. I think it must be, I wonder, is it hard for devotees to, these are the kind of things you can't discuss with devotees, it's really too sensitive, but I wonder if it's hard for them to keep their faith in their gurus, when, especially if the public face of the guru is as, not as a devotee exactly, as a social welfare worker, or what do they call it, a motivational guru, or something, and they don't, it's almost like they hide, not almost like they hide Krishna, they do hide Krishna, they'll say God, and they won't speak, they won't make it very clear, they often try to hide that they are a disciple of Srila Prabhupada and supposed to be a devotee of Krishna. And when they, things like in Vedic culture, and Srila Prabhupada, of course, promoted very much cow protection, and when they, if they start donkey protection or dog protection, I wonder, what do the disciples think? What are they supposed to think? Where does this come from? It's neither guru nor sadhu nor shastra. Of course, there is in general to be kind to all living beings, advaishta sarva bhutanam, but specifically gauraksha is mentioned repeatedly in shastra, and never anywhere do we find gadha raksha or kukur raksha or any such thing. So it may be very hard for disciples to understand this or to process it in their minds, or maybe they just don't think about it. I don't know. Srila Prabhupada did want to, he wanted to create, he used that word, create a class of brahmanas who are independently thoughtful. And in other words, we're supposed to hear and think about all these things and understand it with our intelligence. But it seems that it's more common nowadays that such thoughtfulness is not encouraged. It's called, thoughtfulness is called offensiveness. And you're just told, just follow your authority. You can't understand. If you're told that there's some great plan which you can't understand, it sounds very suspicious to me, because the whole idea of guru is supposed, he's supposed to make you understand and make you into a brahmana who knows, a brahmana's person who knows what is the science of the absolute truth. So if it's too high for you to understand, sounds suspicious, but then if you're trained not to think, then you can live in blissful ignorance. Faith can be generated by hype. What's the origin of the word hype? Anyone know? I know, but I just not coming to my mind now.
Adambara.
No, I'm saying in English there's some word. It means to... it's practically by advertisement. Yeah, came to my attention recently that it's being advertised that such and such a devotee, who's prominent guru in our movement, joined ISKCON when he was 16. It was not true at all, because he was working as a salesman in America when he joined, and he was already over 20 years old. But it's advertised like that. And I don't know about now, but it used to be that there were three of the original 11 gurus who first started publication of Prabhupada's books in French. But only one could be the first one, but somewhere around there were three of them. So, like that, it's by advertisement. And to some extent that is done. Just accepting sannyas is, it's pumping up yourself to say, hey, look, I'm a big guy here, you should listen to me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started that. And Srila Prabhupada, following his own guru, he did that also. I heard that when Adi Kesh, as we used to call him, Adi Keshava, he was 20 years old, which wasn't so young in those days, but it was still quite young, because, well, the devotees, they were all very young, but even by, this must have been about 75 or 76. So by that time, I guess the average age of the moon was more like 23, 24. So Adi Kesh was only 20 years old, and there's this huge building in Manhattan, and Prabhupada wanted to make him the temple president because he had a very strong personality. I guess he must have been a New Yorker to be as he was, but not necessarily. Prabhupada gave him sannyas at the age of 20, and he said that because he wanted him to be the president, he was very capable. He said, unless I give you sannyas, people won't listen to what you say. So it's somewhat psychological, so big titles, big Vyasa pujas, they generate faith, but there has to be substance there. Unless there's substance, then the whole thing becomes, instead of guru means heavy, then laghu means light. This is a topic which could be got into a lot more. I was recently visiting one Gauriya Math, and the guru that had been there for many, many years, and had been the same guru, and then he'd passed away. And they'd made a chanting machine, like we have for Prabhupada, him chanting japa. I mean, he was very offensive to Prabhupada, and it was just. But by it seems to me just by advertisement, he's made into a great spiritual figure. Even his guru before him was very envious of Prabhupada. Sorry to say, but it's a fact. Prabhupada said it, and there's much evidence of that also. But I'm just wondering how by overstressing, there's some idea, somebody just here's another anecdote from my own miserable life, that Keshavananda in Delhi once brought some family to see me. He said, oh, they're very helpful to us, they're giving donations, they're nice. And then I was talking to them, and they said, actually, we're followers of Ashram Baba. I just told them, look, this guy, complete nonsense. It's nonsense. He's not a guru. He's a rascal, a cheater. And they became upset and went away because they had deep faith in him. But I did hear a few years later, Keshavananda told me that family came back again after Ashram became exposed as being a rascal. But what was it? There were some murder cases in his ashrams. Rape case. Was it him himself? He's an old man. He's an old man to be raping.
Huh? And now his son got caught for raping.
So there's some rape cases and this and that. So there is a limit to even sentimental Indians' credulity. They can also, there are limits, especially if there's sexual misdemeanor. Indian people don't like, you can steal all their money by talking it out of their pocket, and they won't mind so much, as long as you make them feel spiritual. But the sexual misbehavior, they don't like at all. Then they lose the faith. So as long as you can, as they say in English, keep your pants on, I could tell some stories about that also, Bangladesh. As long as you can maintain a profile throughout life, you could go down in history as a great spiritual leader. So, but one of the tests of a guru is actually what he passes on and his disciples, how they are. Srila Prabhupada said about this Swami Narayana. If we read his own book in Gujarat, you'll come across Swami Narayana. Here in Karnataka, I think no one heard of this Swami Narayana.
I'm getting going in Dubai now.
They're becoming what, among non-Gujaratis, they're preaching.
Yeah. Big temple they're building now.
They build big temples, like in Delhi. They have a big temple. People go and look, but they don't convert to Swami Narayanism. It's not even Gujarati. It's a Patelism. It's only Patel. And in Kutch and this and that, which is not Kutch is not actually Gujarat, but it is part of Gujarat state, but it's culturally different. But there are many Kutchis who are. Anyway, it's a community based religion, just like, for instance, Lingayat. It's only Lingayats who become Lingayats. You're born into it. That's all. They don't convert others. You know what Lingayat is? No, he's no idea. In Karnataka, it's a big thing. I think not in this area so much. In the north, is it more? See, even you don't know. You never heard of Lingayats? No. What about Shankar Dev? You've heard of Shankar Dev, right? Anyone else heard of Shankar Dev? You know, because your wife's from Assam. If you're from Assam, and if you're someone like me who reads all kinds of things, and of course I've been... Shankar Dev was the most prominent traditional religious influence in Assam, among the Hindus. Superficially a Vaishnava, but actually more like a Mayavadi. Anyway, I'm just saying that, yeah, Shankar Dev in Assam, considered to be a great spiritual leader and this and that. And, a great example is the Ramakrishna and Vivekananda people. In Bengal, even today, if you say anything against them, you're literally in danger of losing your life. It may be changing somewhat now, but I know because we used to do it in Bengal. Jayabhataka Maharaj told the story. I might have been there, I don't know. After the Rath Yatras, they used to have these, still do, these big pandal programs. And ISKCON wasn't so big in those days. This must have been the 1970s. So Jayabhataka Maharaj gave a lecture. As usual, at the end there were some questions and answers. And someone asked about Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. And Jayabhataka Maharaj said that for years he'd been just, he can't say anything. And all of a sudden it all just burst out. And he's just going, rah, rascals, demons. Rah, 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 it all came out. And everyone was shocked, and there was silence. And then Jayabhataka thought, maybe they'll burn the pandal down. Because in Bengal, you know, it's quite probably burn down and kill all the... in Bengal, it's possible. And then someone stood up and said, anyway, they're doing a good thing. They made this nice festival for anyone. Let's just let it pass. So... But I'm just making the point that it's one of the things I really don't like about Bengal. There are several things. One is this smell of fish cooking. There's some things I like very much, but the smell of cooking fish and everywhere, picture of this Ramakrishna. He looks so horrible. But people think he's very spiritual. But it's all by advertisement, by hype, right? So how can we understand it, within our ISKCON also who's who and what's going on? I would say always we'll just see if they're following Prabhupada. Everyone will say they're following Prabhupada. There's some group, I know in Chennai, I don't know if they do it in other places, but they have their regular meetings. They call them Bhakti Vriksha, something like that. And then for the first 20 minutes of every meeting, there may be new people, they just glorify their guru.
And I just wonder, because there's an anecdote told by Atreya Rishi, who is one of Srila Prabhupada's GBC members, that he used to glorify Prabhupada so much, and Prabhupada at some point told him, look, I'm not the center, it's Krishna. You're supposed to focus on Krishna. That faith, for many devotees, I know for myself, faith in Prabhupada came largely, or one major reason is because you see all these gurus in the West, they're all promoting themselves. You see pictures of them everywhere, the long beard. Oops, I've been shaved for a few days myself. It's not very long. Or their Chinmay Mission and Guru Maharaji and this and that. But Prabhupada never promoted himself, and still, it's still very much the case that in the parts of the world where the Hare Krishna movement is known, Prabhupada is hardly known. And even in India, people know ISKCON. The name of ISKCON is much more well known than Prabhupada. And even today, what Prabhupada said, it's not really reached the Indian public. It's not that when people think of modern gurus, they think of Osho, Ramdev, Asharam. He's coming. He's a new guy on the block. This Jaggi Vasudev. He just popped up. He was by hype. They promoted him. So, but they don't think of Prabhupada. Somehow or other, it's a lacking on our part, I would say. So, faith in Guru should be there. One thing that I see in ISKCON today, it often undermines faith, or devotees have their doubts, is if gurus live very opulently, which is not necessarily a bad thing. In Prabhupada, if he lived, once the movement became flush with money from mass book distribution, devotees got properties like a Bhaktivedanta Manor. If you see Srila Prabhupada's room in Melbourne, you must have seen that Prabhupada's room. But very opulent. But devotees use that for inviting important people. And there are videos of the very nice exchanges with Prabhupada, with these lawyers in Melbourne. There's some funny exchange or some funny thing. And then in England, Shamasunda would bring actually very prominent people, well-known people in society, big people, to meet Prabhupada. Lord Brockway and who was there, that racing driver, Graham Hill, and Donovan, George Harrison, they came to meet. Donovan, you never heard of Donovan. No, he was a big pop singer in those days, but he didn't stay long because his girlfriend pulled him away when he was interested. He came to meet Prabhupada, but his girlfriend, seeing that he was interested, pulled him away very quickly. There were several. I can't remember all the names of them now. Arnold Toynbee. These are well-known names in the intellectual circles even today, even though they all passed away. Most of them passed away. So Prabhupada used that. It was very impressive. People would come. If you asked them to come when the devotees were living in some slum or something, they wouldn't come. But once they had a nice country house and good facility, and they took it very seriously. So it can be used for preaching. But there's some idea, well, these gurus are living very opulently and they're just enjoying themselves. So we hear a lot about keeping up with the times. So maybe keeping up with the times for our gurus in ISKCON today would just be a little sensitive to not live in such a manner that invites criticism, because any little fault, real or imagined, will be broadcast widely, that's for sure. If we want to keep up with the times, and if we think that, well, now the world's full of this new age, let's get all new agey, let's change with the times, let's go into the future, let's not get stuck. Well, I also believe in changing the time, go back into the past. when we're talking about simple living, high-thinking communities, we're not living in the present. We're going back, not going into the future, because the future is, what is that verse? Tatashchanu dinam dharma satyam shochang shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantaya balang smritihi. As Kali Yuga progresses, we use that word progress, but it means as it goes on, not that it's getting better, then all good qualities, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, bodily strength, memory, kalena balena raja, the ayu, the lifespan, everything will decrease day by day. So we're interested in reconstructing society in a more simple way, the way that people used to live, with not just for the sake of going back in the past, but for making a situation which is favorable for Krishna consciousness. What are they doing? The sand there? What are they doing?
There is a festival tomorrow.
Uh-huh. You know what's going on? Okay. So the deep faith or real faith or substantial faith comes from seeing devotees absorbed in Krishna consciousness and instructing us by practice and precept how we can advance in Krishna consciousness. In other words, telling us and acting like that also, setting an example to follow. But unless that is there, then if you're told, well, you just have to believe it, you're not capable to understand all this, then the faith becomes something intangible, not based on anything. It's not that you can look and say, yes, Prabhupada wanted this, Shastra says this. And that becomes a very strong basis for faith, isn't it? But if you say, okay, now we're making friends with Mayavadis and talking in an indirect way about and smiling like Mayavadis, and you can't find anything in Prabhupada to substantiate that. You can't find anything in Shastra to substantiate that. So you're just told, well, you just believe it and have faith, but there's nothing to look and to look back and say, yes, this is clearly coming in parampara. If you can see something's clearly coming in parampara, then your faith should be very strong. If it's not, then you're just left hanging, hoping. Or the system that Srila Prabhupada gave and all the acharyas give for making our faith strong, if it's not there, then what do devotees think? It may be in their hearts that they know something's wrong, but they can't admit it to themselves, or they just don't want to think about it. It must be difficult for that. If we say, Prabhupada wanted his books distributed, let's distribute them. Prabhupada wanted these farm projects, let's do it. And if we actually accept Srila Prabhupada as the Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtu Tarasata Sri Srimad Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the great emissary who Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent to this world to fulfill Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world, then if we speak what Prabhupada said and try to do what he says, then that should create faith. If we don't accept Prabhupada like that, that's something else. That's one kind of rascaldom which has entered our movement, complete rascaldom, to undermine Prabhupada and say, well, actually he was wrong, or now we know better. Very dangerous. But if we have faith that Prabhupada's plans are perfect, let's do what Prabhupada wanted. We may do other things. welfare work, which Prabhupada didn't want. We may say, oh, it's good for preaching. We may say it's good for preaching, but what did Prabhupada want? He didn't want that. Do we have a better plan? As the saying goes, the truth is always the truth, even if no one says it. But actually Prabhupada said it, and that we're grateful to Prabhupada because he said it. And a lie or an untruth, even if millions of people say it's true, it's not true. But it is possible to get people very strongly, committedly, committed to something which is blatantly untrue and absolutely evil. And the great example from modern history is the whole German nation getting behind Hitler to exterminate the Jews. It's not a fact that Jews need to be killed, but it was taken as a fact. And they all cooperated and they all thought it was, yeah, this is great, this is what we need to do. Is it the truth? No. But everyone believed it. If you didn't believe it, you were in a lot of trouble. That's one thing. And maybe that's true in our, not exactly that example, but I'm saying that if you don't go along with the idea that this and this and this is actually the real path ISKCON should have, and we should do this, if you don't believe that, then you're in a lot of trouble, then you're offensive and you're wrong and this and that. So it's groupthink that that trying to substantiate that which is clearly what Prabhupada didn't want as being what we should do now, and you go along with it, and you're afraid to not go along with it, and not afraid, it may be afraid not only of social ostracism, but also afraid that, you know, I made this big step, I took initiation, I've put my whole spiritual life on the line, and now it's very difficult to admit or to even think that there could be something going wrong there. I made a very wrong decision, just like maybe with those ashram people. They couldn't, it was... Maybe I shouldn't have said it directly. Maybe you could say I shouldn't have said it directly. He's a rascal and a nonsense and a cheater. It seemed pretty obvious to me. But what is that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita? Achalam Shraddha. Achalam. What is that? Yo ya yang yang tanang bhakta shraddha achitim. Tasya tasya achalam shraddham. Tameva vidithamiham. Krishna says the people, they have faith in various things. He's specifically talking about demigod worship. Krishna is just pointing out demigod worship. It's for foolish people. Then why did then the faith make come? Why do people have faith in demigods? Krishna says, I make their faith strong. People want to believe like that. He makes their faith strong. Huh? Then in Gita, 15th chapter, Krishna's in everyone's heart. Jnanam apohanam cha. He gives knowledge and forgetfulness. So if we want to believe something strongly, Krishna will help us to believe that. So maybe it may be very difficult and it, to not have faith in that. It's called emotional investment. You made an emotional investment. It's just like you probably know very well from your days as a financial advisor that there's a saying, throwing bad money after good. So people, they start a business and after some time it becomes obvious that they're going to lose their investment. It's a losing business. But they still think, well, I already invested so much time and energy and money, let's put some more money in and try to bring it up. But the sensible thing would be is that you already lost so much money, don't lose any more. So there's emotional investment that I put my hope here and I hoping after, let's go on to that. And it may be very difficult also when we see that Devotees, they do many things which are right and proper. They do get up for Mangal Arati. They do chant their rounds. They do a lot of preaching. They promote, some of them, book distribution. But then on the other hand, they'll do something just like is one of our ISKCON gurus in India. Many disciples, promotes Prabhupada's book distribution. But then it's recorded there in Prabhupada's conversations that this devotee was trying to insist to Prabhupada that we introduce... How many times have I said this? I'm saying it again. Because it's almost traumatic to me. I just can't work it out. That... He was trying to, three times he said to Prabhupada, we should introduce the government curriculum in our Gurukul. And Prabhupada eventually said to him very emphatically, unequivocally, never do that. And now he's doing it. And just what are disciples supposed to think? When you see that Srila Prabhupada directly told him not to do something and he's directly doing the opposite. But on the other hand, so much book distribution, so many temples, so many disciples. The two major justifications are time, place, and circumstance. Although the word never seems to cover all times and all places and all circumstances. Or the other great justification is, it's for preaching. We can do it, it's for preaching. Although there are several letters and instructions of Srila Prabhupada where things seem to be very good for preaching, but Prabhupada stopped it because he thought, I'm recording all this in my upcoming book, The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. not that it's likely to change anything overnight. How Srila Prabhupada stopped the road show, which was very good preaching. It was a rock concert with Krishna conscious themes, and there were other things also which Srila Prabhupada just stopped, because even though it was for preaching and it seemed to be quite successful, but Srila Prabhupada thought he said we had simple Hari Kirtan men. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness all over the world with mridanga and kartals and chanting the holy name, and we should do also. Don't introduce all these things. So I also do things which are different from Prabhupada, could be said. I'm not saying that I do everything exactly the same way. An example might be the tilak I'm wearing at the present. I was told recently, I was in Nandagram, a farm in Gujarat, and at that time I'm wearing this red color tilak, which looks something like the red chandan, which Vaishnavas are not supposed to use, but it's actually from an anthill on this farm. And in that Nandagram farm, it was black. It looked like Radha Kunda tilak. The idea which I explained in one of those talks in Nandagram was that, well, we're supposed to be heading towards self-sufficiency. And most likely, almost certainly, until recently, it wasn't possible to get Gopi Chandan all over the world. When I joined in London, we didn't have Gopi Chandan. There wasn't so much trade between India and England at that time. We used to use Fuller's Earth. So it was grey colour. Fuller's Earth is used to be used for fulling, which means treating. When wool is sheared off the backs of the sheep, and then it has to be treated by Fuller's Earth so that it attains the texture that can be used. So we used to use that. It's had almost the same, probably still has the same consistency as Gopi Chandan. So we can't always get everything. We will maybe not be able to get Gopi Chandan always and everywhere. And it's just part of self-sufficiency. What's the word? Svavalambanam. What's the word? Self? Svavalambanam. What's self-sufficiency? Is that the word? Self-sufficiency is called in English. Self is something else, is it?
Self-reliance.
self-reliance. I think self-sufficiency is the word. Yeah, yeah. That means that you just produce what you need for yourself. So as far as possible, we don't import things from outside. So if you get it's a small thing, but it's symbolic on my part, that if you can get earth here, which according to Shastra, you can use earth from an anthill from a riverbed, but it's all sand here at the river, so it wouldn't be very useful. Maybe there's, anyway, you can use it for marking your body with the temples of Vishnu for Tilak. So I did that. And I'm doing it when I'm here. When I leave here, then probably I'll revert to Gopi Chandan. So I was told that as I was giving my lecture, someone was furiously typing in the comments section. I was told it was a Ritvik Vadi, I don't know, whatever. That, see, why are you wearing that tilak? That's not what Prabhupada taught. It's probably true. We don't have 100% proof, just like we don't have 100% proof that every man is mortal. Right? And there are, how many people in the world? 7.3 billion or something. So there are 7.3 billion doubtful cases. They might not die. But anyway, it's not likely that Prabhupada ever wore earth from an anthill at what is now called Chenakeshav Gram, or from Nandagram for that matter, as tilak. So I'm doing something which is different from Prabhupada. But it's definitely different, isn't it? But on the other hand, what is the rationale? What is the justification? What is my point? Well, I'm just making the... Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram. So if you're going to have Varnashram and self-sufficient farm communities, this is the kind of thing we have to do. Not that we can always import or buy from outside sugar and flowers and... Some things we may have to. Can you produce hing here?
Grows in dry areas.
Yeah, you won't get hing. So if you want to have hing, then you have to purchase it, right? And what about chandan? You could probably grow chandan here, but it's all under government control, right? Governmentized it. Is it used to be that if a chandan tree grows on your property, it's government property. Anyway, you can grow chandan, but anyway, someone will come and steal it from you. People come and just, yeah, it's illegal. Any tree, it just gets cut. It's a major ecological problem in India. Anyway, so that's something I'm doing different from Prabhupada. But there's a rationale, there's a reason, and I trust that if devotees are reasonable, they can accept that I'm not doing it in a spirit of defying Prabhupada, showing I'm different, but rather it's following him that things may be different from exactly what Prabhupada gave. Actually, that Kuladri Prabhu, who was the president of New Vrindavan, made a quote which is key for my understanding of Srila Prabhupada, that he said that when Srila Prabhupada used to come to New Vrindavan, he wouldn't talk about book distribution, he talked about farms and how the future of our movement is these farms. So Kuladri said that I saw from what Prabhupada instructed me, that I saw the future of our movement was very different from what was going on at the time, in as much as it'll be farm-based. The majority of devotees would live on farms. So many, if we are to introduce Varnashram as Prabhupada wanted, then many things will change. The whole social structure. They're going to be Brahman. Varnashram means that Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprastas, and Sannyasis. You're a Vanaprasta, right? More or less, isn't it? You've both sons are married. You're just practicing Krishna consciousness full time with your wife. So there are Vanaprastas, gradually. So, and then there'll be different rules and functions for them. There may be so many things which are different. Something else that critic on the, pointed out, said that Srila Prabhupada said there should be no more sannyas. Srila Prabhupada did say that at one point, but then after that he himself gave sannyas to other devotees. And he pointed out in his discussion of the verse where there are five acts, Kali Varja, five things which are forbidden in Kali Yuga. You're nodding your head. Do you know what those five things are? You're going like this. What are they?
Sannyas, cooking.
Sannyas, cooking?
Cook, killing cows.
Killing cows. Well, that's forbidden in all ages.
Yes.
Hmm?
Ashwamedha.
Ashwamedha. So we got three. I gave you one.
Begetting children
Via the devar, the brother. And sannyas. There's palapaitrikam. Ashwamedham, gavalambyam, sannyasa, palapaitrikam. Devarena sutta patim pancham kalo vivarjat. Vivarjat. They should be given up. They are meant to be. So there are five things. Horse sacrifices, cow sacrifice, ashramayam gavalambyam, sannyas, offering meat in shrad ceremonies, and begetting a child in the womb of one's wife, if the father is, or if the husband is somehow unable to do so, he does so via his elder brother. So that's forbidden. Five. So why is sannyas allowed and Bhaktisthan Saraswati explained that, and Prabhupada followed that explanation, that sannyas is it's part of the varnashram system given by Krishna. So it's what's being forbidden here is not sannyas per se, but the common misrepresentation of it. But actual sannyas is wanted. If someone can actually take sannyas for preaching, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself did, as Ramanuja and Madhva did, being well aware of these verses, this verse, if they can do so properly, then that's wanted. So, even if Prabhupada hadn't given sannyas to a few devotees after saying no more sannyas, being disgusted with the fall down of so many sannyasis, then still that explanation is there. Anyway, so there's someone who's criticized that I'm not following Prabhupada, and in some ways, I do some things which are not exactly that Prabhupada did. And one thing which could become quite controversial is that, well, one thing is I don't give Brahmin initiation very widely. As I understand from Srila Prabhupada's teachings, that, although, see, when Srila Prabhupada was present, someone who had been in the movement a few months, they got initiated. I was initiated after 4 months. And earlier in the movement, it could be practically walk-in initiation. So after 4 months, it was usually 6 months. And then after just a year in the movement, I was given Brahminical initiation. And that, but Prabhupada many times indicated actually that we shouldn't give Brahminical initiation to everyone. Should see who's actually fit for that, who's actually got Brahminical tendencies. If we're going to have Varnashram and everyone's a Brahmin, then where's the Varnashram? So we have to see that some devotees are, their nature is more like that of a Vaishya or a Shudra, and maybe like a Kshatriya, and maybe not everyone's like a Brahmin. So what's the meaning? If you're going to have Varnashram communities and the blacksmith is a Brahmin, then where's the Varnashram? What's the meaning? So I don't give Brahminical initiation, especially to in cases where devotees are working in a job, because that is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Shvavriti. It means the occupation of a dog to have a master. So it's meaningless to say we're to make Brahmins and saying we're establishing Varnashram and have people paid in a job and calling them Brahmins because they're living actually like Shudras. Now, I am willing, and I actually started this at our community there in Nandagram, that we're supposed to do Varnashram, right? We can't wait for the GBC to wake up to this or anyone else to wake up to it. When are they going to wake up to it? 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, a whole, maybe the whole, already one generation has gone by since Prabhupada left. So I already started that. We're designating some devotees as, we didn't designate anyone as a Kshatriya, but Brahmin we have, Vaishya, we designated some devotees as Vaishya. Some are Shudras, they're happy. They understand. We're not saying they're less than the devotees who are designated as Brahmanas, but they have a certain role in to play in society. Even one of the young boys was in our Gurukul. Then we trained him as a carpenter, and he's happy. I'll be a Shudra. I'll stay here my whole life and do carpentry. There's always going to be plenty of carpentry work in a village, especially when we're building houses and need furniture, this and that. Not much furniture. So introducing that, and I'm giving initiation, what we call second initiation, to those, well, only one so far, who are designated as Shudra, but just the socially designated. We don't say a Vaishya is a Shudra. It's a little, it's not that complex, but often devotees misunderstand. So yeah, I've given initiation, but without the Brahma Gayatri. That's all, and explain to them. And to women also, I give without Brahma Gayatri, which might be something sensational in the ISKCON. Oh, Prabhupada gave it. Prabhupada gave Brahma Gayatri to women. So I give them initiation whereby they can cook for the deities, they can do deity worship, they can chant the mantras that Srila Prabhupada gave, but not the Brahma Gayatri, because traditionally it's not given to women, and that might be considered something wrong. But if we, again, the reasoning is there, if we're going to introduce Varnashram, then we should do, we have to have these divisions. Now, that might be considered highly controversial, maybe it will be. I'm going to read something. Oh, the question may come up, then why then did Prabhupada give it to women? And okay, here's someone else wrote about this. I'm reading what someone else wrote. There is a description in one of Satsarupa Maharaj's books about how women came to have Brahmin initiation. And said, that Prabhupada, first of all, gave it to three male devotees, and all the women devotees stayed away. Satsarupa Maharaj called it a feminist protest. They were all upset. Why the men only? So I'm going to read a text about this. Some people emphasize that Srila Prabhupada intended that women be gurus according to a letter to Hansa Dutra in 1969, so it should be so. His Holiness Puladananda Swami has very nicely shown how this is wrong, that Srila Prabhupada's actual intention was to get his disciples to read his books. But that's another whole can of worms, the female Diksha Guru thing. But they ignore the fact that Srila Prabhupada didn't want to give females second initiation. His intention was clear. They should not get it. Why do they ignore this fact? Nor did they ask, why did Srila Prabhupada relent? Because he was faced with an emergency situation and imminent revolt by the feminist conditioned females in ISKCON. And just as a... as an aside here, I'll tell a couple of anecdotes. One is one of my disciples from India. His wife's also from India. Means they're not Indians born in the West, but Indians born in India, living in America. So he told me that his wife was standing outside the temple and Prabhupada disciple lady called to come in. She said, no, I can't come in. What do you mean you can't come in? She said, I can't come in. I'm in that time. And then the lady disciple Prabhupada became very angry at her. She said, why are you trying? Why are you trying to do something more? I think you know better than Prabhupada. And she, the poor devotee was, she couldn't imagine going in the temple in that time. And on the other hand, she had a devotee who she very much respect as a senior Prabhupada disciple, severely chastising her for not coming in the temple. So it became very difficult for her. Now, one of Srila Prabhupada's earliest disciples was serving Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada lady, and Prabhupada made it clear to her that he didn't want her to be around or do anything during that time, but she became upset. And then Prabhupada said, oh, it's okay. But she later said that she regretted that, because that's what Prabhupada actually wanted. So that these are important points to understand, that Srila Prabhupada didn't throw out the traditional culture, and there are reasons for that, but he did make concessions. I'll go back. Why did Srila Prabhupada relent? Because he was faced with an emergency situation, an imminent revolt by the feminist conditioned females in ISKCON. In emergency situations, one is sometimes forced to do what should not be done. For example, Vasudev promised to hand over all his future children to Kamsa for certain death in order to save the life of Devaki in the present. Promising to hand over your children to be murdered should not be done, but it was done to save Devaki's life in the present. So in order to appease his female disciples, who were at that time cultural barbarians when it came to the Vedic culture, and save his nascent ISKCON, he agreed to do what he should not have done. He gave them the Savitri Gayatri. But like Ambarish, who was also faced with the dilemma of how to break his fast without offending Durvasa Muni, he chose to break it by drinking water, which simultaneously broke and did not break his fast. Srila Prabhupada did something similar. He gave them the Savitri Gayatri, but not the sacred thread, which is the symbol of a twice-born, and he never called his female disciples Brahmanas. They were, at most, they were Brahmanis, the wives of Brahmanas. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada in a conversation on August the 2nd, 1976. Actually, in Bengal has lost its original culture. In other provinces, the Brahmana class, they're keeping very strictly the original culture. Even a Brahmana would not accept foodstuff prepared by his wife, because a woman is considered a Shudra. The woman, when she becomes the wife of a Brahmana, then she is called a Brahmani, but she's not offered Brahminical culture. In other words, she's not offered the sacred thread. She remains as a Shudra. So therefore, a strict Brahmana does not accept foodstuff prepared by his wife. Still in UP, the wife will arrange for the cooking, and he, the husband, will sit down and cook dal and chapatis. Then he will eat, and whatever remains that is there, that will be taken by her, but he will not take foodstuff cooked by his wife even. So the females in ISKCON, even though they chant the mantra, in that sense they can't be considered to be Brahmanas. It was for an emergency purpose of appeasement, only to save the nascent organization from danger. So the implication is that Srila Prabhupada didn't want to give it to them, which is why he never gave the sacred thread. But the women were given Savitri Gayatri to avert an emergency, but when emergencies are over, one should revert back to regular standards. Thus, females should not be given Brahma Gayatri. I suspect I'm saying Brahma Gayatri, and that many people won't even know what that is. They don't even know what you're talking about. That became clear recently. There was some discussion on the issue of female Dikshaguru. It became very clear that even some of our devotees have very little idea of very, very little idea. Devotees, they're sannyasis in ISKCON, and very little idea of anything about Vedic culture or even any common sense principles of logic. It was actually quite shocking to see some of the points that were being made. shocking how culturally ignorant they were. So that Srila Prabhupada did that in an emergency situation, but when emergencies are over, one should revert back to regular standards. And I take that the whole Varnashram idea, Srila Prabhupada said that we're making brahmanas, but then there's no meaning to being a brahman unless there are vaishyas, shudras, kshatriyas, unless the whole system's there. It's no meaning. It's something like having a screw. Or the screw has to be connected with something to have any use. Yeah, and in this discussion that's going on, the majority, they had no idea what a pancharatrik mantra is. What is pancharatra? No idea. The Vedic initiation, pancharatrik initiation, no idea whatsoever. So that might be very controversial, but anyway, that's why I do it. And like I said, we can't wait for the whole world of ISKCON. Maybe hundreds of years later, they might wake up and say, hey, Prabhupada wanted Varnashram, what are we going to do about it? Let's get started. That's my thought. And definitely, some people won't like it. I have at least one female disciple who lost faith in me because she doesn't accept my stance on gender roles. What to do? You can't force people to have faith. Let people develop faith by hearing. That's hearing and understanding. That's what's supposed to be. What does go on a lot in our ISKCON is that mostly what happens is that someone joins some bhakti riksha or something, and then they just become the disciple of that guru, and they never really think about it. If someone doesn't want to be my disciple, wants to go to another guru, okay, it's faith. You can't legislate it. If you don't have faith in me, what can I do? I said, it's up to you. That's all. Even Srila Prabhupada himself said, don't have faith in me, you have faith in Krishna. And see, when John Lennon of the Beatles, who were a famous rock group, when he asked, actually it's a very good question, that there are so many people saying, I'm the guru. How can we know who's correct? And Prabhupada said, well, they all accept Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna. Krishna says to always think of me. So you find the one who's promoting the same thing, always think of Krishna. That's the test. You can't legislate faith. You have to. If people are fortunate, they'll get the right guru. Someone who will help them to develop faith in Krishna. Can be a tricky thing because there are so many people who are talking about Krishna. But we wouldn't recommend anyone to go to them. When you go to Vrindavan now, Vrindavan, Govardhan, you always see so many posters advertising, so many, by the grace of Prabhupada's preaching, interest in Krishna Bhakti has expanded, and so many posters for advertising this Swami and this, actually they're mostly Grihasthas it seems, they're giving katha, speaking Srimad Bhagavat Katha. I wouldn't recommend anyone to go to any of them if you're actually serious about Krishna consciousness, because it's the entertainment style. It's not meant for spiritually The speakers themselves don't have any clear idea of Krishna consciousness. I'm not sure if it happens now, but from time to time that used to happen in Delhi. That there's so many devotees, mostly they get initiated by Gopal Krishna Maharaj, and then at least twice it happened, there some big exodus to Radha Kund or some Gauriamat guru who says, hey, your guru is just a neophyte, and we're on the higher level, Rasa, Katha, and all this. And just, phew, the whole group, big like an iceberg breaking, just breaks off and floats off to Radha Kund, is never seen ever again. So, we try to give people substantial faith that this is, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the message is coming down in parampara, Srila Prabhupada is the great Acharya sent by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're trying to do what Srila Prabhupada wanted, what he said. Hare Krishna. To conclude my little talk, Dante nidhaya churnakam padayo nepatya kritva chaka kushatameta daham bravimi. Hey sadhava sakalam eva vihaya durad chaitanya chandra charne kuru tanu ragam. Any questions? There could be so many. It's one of those controversial things. The kind of classes that get more hits than others. If I speak on Vishnu Sahasranama, some direct glorification of Krishna, not so many hits. Speak something controversial. Not so much now. I think people are so fed up. There's so many controversial things have been going on for so many years that it got boring. But these are important issues. That's why I'm trying to discuss them. Mancha kalpata rubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.